family of running a family business in terms of growth and bringing in expertise and so on. What are the real positives? What are the really good things about running a family business? Does it make it, you know, can you be quicker moving? You know, give me a few quicker decision making, that sort of thing. What are the real plus points?
I think there are a lot of plus points to that. And we've just opened up new offices in East Midlands, and a lot of the guys that have started over there came from a multinational contracting company, and they just can't get over the speed of what you can make a decision. They're used to taking months and months and months and having paperwork come out of here everywhere just before you make a decision. And you know, if we look at something and the rational rate and the right thing is right for doing it, and you make that decision and you go for it, you know, and that is the strength, I think, of family business, that we can sit down on the table, we can get that and go for it. And we're not hampered by reporting back up to here, there and yonder. And I mean, I think that is an amazing strength for family business.
Is there an element of being able to talk absolutely straight to other members of the board in a family business, where you maybe have to defer slightly to non-family members? Can you just call it as you see it?
Well, it's getting that balance right between getting, you know, the rules and regs of good governance and the fact that you are sitting around the table with your siblings or whatever it happens to be. But certainly that you know, when blood, sweat and tears is required, I think the fact that a family business will are prepared to go that extra mile, it, you know, gets a lot of family businesses through sort of and over thresholds in growth phases that maybe non-family businesses might stumble on. And then, as you say, David, you know, that nimbleness around decision making that can literally be done, you know, on over a coffee on a Saturday afternoon or whatever, that's vital as well. I think that's very advantageous.
Is the flip side of that the procrastinating then? Because I imagine if you're in a board situation in a normal corporate business, once a decision is made, it's kind of made. Whereas if it's a family, it can be revisited. If you
lots of times. Yeah. But that's about getting. You then need to get the balance right between putting. We talked about earlier on getting the proper governance in place. You know, the fact that you're there in the family, the trust is there, and that you can make it a decision. But that's the business then making a decision. You've got to have the governance in place to ensure that the business is making the decision, and you move on with that. You know, roll and say, well, that was. Many, you know, we can go back on them, you know, in 2 weeks' time, whatever. No, the decision has been made, and you've got to move on at that stage.
I think for clients, just like David was saying, in terms of being able to make key decisions, like at senior operational level, senior director level, and so forth, I can quite clearly see the advantages we're able to pass on to our clients, because that's a lot of feedback. They'll come back, you're very quick, you're so prompt, it's allowing us to get moving and progressing much quicker, so they can see the value. That can bring, as opposed to, I suppose, other SMEs or medium large size companies that aren't family oriented or family run. So that definitely is a big plus, and it's something that we benefit from, but our clients ultimately are getting a huge gain from that as well.
Any thoughts on the positives, Paul?
I think the positives we would see are, I mean, our own example of our workforce. My colleagues, as I look upon them all, they're not people that work for me, they're people that work with me, that I've grown up with. I mean, most of the majority of our guys, which is now probably in the region of about 45, have been with the business 10 years or more, which is quite a high stat of employees to be staying with the business. And I think one of the reasons why they do it, I don't believe it's because we overpay them. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's not because we overpay them. I think it's more to do with the fact that a family business is less likely to be closed in the way that another company owned by venture capitalists could just be shut in the morning. I mean, I'm hardly going to close my business on myself. So people will see that we're in it for the long haul. You know, second generation businesses around the table are in this for the really long haul. You know, we're just wanting to carry it on and do our best with it and make the right decisions for the business. And when you take a decision to open in the East Midlands or our new venture in Glasgow, and you're investing a lot of your cash that has taken quite a while to generate to put into that business, you know, you want to make sure that the thing's going to work. And I think people that work with us see that as a huge positive. I think as well clients see that as a positive. They see what you're trying to do and understand the reasons behind it, and they see it just the company going from strength to strength, hopefully.
Yeah, I think another positive is support, because as you're saying, if you're going through the growth spurt or you happen to have to be in two places at the same time, then one of your siblings will step in and go, okay, well, I'll do this bit and you do that bit. So there is that, where somebody else may put their coat on and go home, they do actually stay behind and help you out with it. So it is good from that point of view.
And trust as well is a big thing, I find. And since like Monique joined the company, having somebody else that at that level you can speak to, and you can trust them explicitly and get genuine feedback, and there's no edge or there's no, you know, so it's just straight talking. And, you know, you don't have a cynical view or whatever, so it's just as it is. And I think that's quite important too.
As a bank, we would see the agility of decision making. In a family business, we would see that. And then when we have the non-ex directors in, it's all done very professional. Those hard conversations can happen. Also, seasonal businesses, family businesses, when something happens, if there's a big order coming up to Christmas, it is all hands onto deck. Everybody, you know, if it's a limited company, a PLC, people might go home, you might have to start negotiations, whatever, but a family-run business, everybody gets stuck in. I was talking to a husband and wife recently after Christmas, and they were working like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning to get orders out, and their team supported them, and that's what you get in family businesses. And the other key thing would be relationships. We hear back from our customers that they value the relationship with the bank, but also their customers value the relationships with family businesses, and they've known each other for a long, long time, and people like doing business with family businesses.
Yeah, they like the continuity and the fact that they're dealing with the same people. There's not continual chains at high levels that they know.
So it can be a selling point.
Totally. There are lots of advantages of the family business.
But on the flip side, if you're trying to get into a big blue chip company or a multinational and you're coming along going, we're a family business, they may actually look at it. You're not a proper professional company, which is sometimes what people see.
Still see that.
Yeah, so that is a disadvantage as well.
So do you guys, when you see a family company, do you see a company where maybe the owners is too reliant on the owners, and you're thinking, actually, well, if it was structured differently, the owners wouldn't have to kill themselves every Christmas by getting the staffing right? They should be able to step away and make their life a lot easier and probably develop a business at the same time.
I think it goes back to one of the early things we discussed, the, you know, the ability to bring in more expertise to round that out. If you are left just with the family owners who maybe have a limited skill set, can do some things very well, but other things not. Yes, I mean, that would worry me. I don't know whether the bank would feel the same, but you know, it's nice to look at a company and see the family owners there, but also see the other expertise and think that it's been rounded out nicely.
Yeah, because no matter how big a company, family company is, the owners always seem to have to work very, very hard. And I'm wondering whether that's absolutely necessary, or was that a decision they've made?
I've seen both sides of it, and I think as businesses grow and the money's retained in the business and the capacity is there to employ additional people, it's surrounding yourself with good people, whether they're employees or you're giving them a small equity shareholding in the business. It's getting the right people to work with you so that you can then go off on your 2 weeks holidays or whatever and know that your business is in good hands.
That's right, which is the point you were making about the infrastructure being there to allow that.
But in the early days, of starting up a family business or winning new contracts, it is, you go through that intense period where it is all hard work.
You find in the early days as well, it's quite interesting, family business, that there's those family members that aren't on the payroll but are actually crucial to the development of the business. And there's a high percentage of family businesses start off as co-preneurships, whether it's a man and wife or a cohabiting partnership. That start the business, and sometimes it's one of the partners' idea and passion and dream and whatnot, and that's the business. And maybe in the first instance, the other partner maybe has another job or a part time job, or is it at home housekeeping or looking after the children and whatnot, but still do the paperwork, chase the invoices. You know, there's a big contribution there, and a lot of family businesses, compared to non-family businesses, might not get across the first 2 or 3 stages if it isn't for that effort from the non-payroll members. You know, and again, you know, I'm a great believer, if we're going to rebalance the economy in Northern Ireland, of more family businesses, that government need to be cognizant of the likes of that, because when they're these family members in the early stage businesses who are bleeding for the business but not getting recognised, they aren't building up any pension rights. They aren't, you know, we need to be aware of that. They're part of the fabric of our future economy, and we need to acknowledge that. But crucial to the early stages of family business.
I think the government puts so much legislation, I mean, so much is changing now as well, which it puts a big drain and a burden, especially if you're a small company that's just getting started. And you have to look at auto enrolment. So you've got the living wage, pension levy that's going to be coming out. Maybe family businesses aren't big enough to have to worry about that. But this puts all burden on the company, so it takes you away from looking at the business and sorting out your VAT and everything else that the government wants you to look after. So I mean, the government has to maybe have a look at that as well to help businesses to reduce the burden.
The balancing of business and personal life, then it can vary from you two who have to tackle this every day, presumably, and I'm in the same situation, through to other family businesses where it might be, you know, birthdays and weddings and Christmases and whatever. Is it an issue? Is it something you need to keep looking at, the balancing, or is it something you just simply get used to and you get on with?
You don't know any different.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just what I mean, we were actually out the weekend as a family for a birthday, and we all thought we'd go away on holiday maybe for a week together. Then we suddenly thought, actually, we can't.
Somebody else
to stay. Because there won't be anybody in the company.
We just team go away for a week.
Yeah, that wouldn't really be fair on the staff, so we don't do that. But so that would be nice to have a family holiday, but that's a consideration. But usually, because we've grown to the size that we are now, you know, I take the same holidays as all the rest of the staff, and I take my holidays. We don't take more, we just take the same. So everybody's treated the same way, and I think that gets respect from your staff as well. And when you're pitching in as well, it shows that I'm not asking you to do something that I'm not prepared to do myself, which I think is very important.
Funny enough, I used to work, as I mentioned before, as a pharmacist. I worked for a medium-sized pharmacy company, and I remember speaking to one of the directors there, and he told me what they felt was a good sign of a business was a business where the directors could leave for a week, the thing wouldn't fall apart, so it wasn't dependent on these people. So whereas we're all talking about, maybe it's if you're the owner or you're a family owner, you don't want to let go, but that's what I see coming out here is there's a lot of wanting that control and not letting go, and maybe it's counterproductive to your own life style, if you like.
You do actually go through different stages depending on the length of time you've been doing it, and you know, you go through stages where you're sometimes frightened of letting go in case people can do it without you, and then you go through other stages where you need to let go, because if you don't, you can't branch out into doing something else, and I think it's actually okay to have those different feelings as you go along that path. It's you use those as experiences, and each time one of them happens, and it's fine, and it all works, you actually are stronger because of it. And I mean, I know within our business that it's down to all of the workforce that are there that are really just driving the business forward all the time, and it's about empowering all those guys to make decisions. You know, it's not me that's making the decisions. I might take a view on something to say, I think this is what the direction of the company should go in at some point, or opening somewhere across the water and doing things like that. But it's the day-to-day stuff is all done by the team that's in place. And, you know, it's letting them have the space. And to be fair, they do a better job of it than me anyway. So it's let them go on with it.
I think that's right. I mean, we would have regional managing directors looking over parts of the business. So in Scotland and Midlands and, you know, and I think it's right that those guys can get on with running the business. We're still there to give them the backup and everything else. But, you know, if I needed to go away for a week, well, you have to work on that scenario. If I get run over on the bus, that big red bus tonight, the business needs to go on. So we need to build the business in that format that if anything happened to you, the business will still go on and it's in good hands. And I think the people we have around us, that's exactly what would happen.
Yeah, plus you can't be an expert in 200 odd jobs or 90 odd jobs. You have to have the people who have the skills and trust them.
as you get bigger and bigger, that becomes more and more apparent. Your skill sets required.
The owners, but you're right, you know, the owners, the founders, you know, will still seem to be the ones that you know, are thinking about it more and investing more time in the business and what have you. But in terms of that journey of growth, you've got to peopleize it. And peopleize it to the extent that you can be done without, because it's the only way you can go after the new opportunities. And really, when you look at it, the companies that do grow and do scale are those that invest in their people. You know, it's the old saying, you know, plans and processes don't grow businesses, people do. And you've got to invest in people. And go through that pain barrier of feeling, actually, they can do without me, you know. And I think that's really important. I always tell a story when we were totally in the business and you know, as well as getting your own sort of social life and holidays, but when you're raising children as well, you know, there's not an awful lot of difference between raising children and growing a small business. You know, the attachment's very, very similar. And we talked about the business, obviously, all the time at all. When we went to a parent-teacher's consultation, and Tony, who was the youngest at that stage, the teacher turned around and said, "We had a really interesting incident in the class last week when we were doing our spellings," and he was primary one, primary two, and we put the word straight up, S-T-R-E-E-T, and he put his hand up and he says, "Mischief," spelled that the wrong way. So at a very early age, you know, the business was ingrained in everyone's blood. Yeah. So, thankfully, he's moved on from that. The spelling has improved.
Just on that point, I think if you're a CEO of an established company, obviously, you know, the key role there is strategy and governance, whatever else. So you aren't as operational. But I think if you're a company that's still growing or an SME, then you don't necessarily have the luxury of being able to extract yourself fully to that role, that comparable role that would be in a more established company or a non-family business. So you have to wear a number of hats until you get to that stage. But from speaking to a lot of people, they never really get to that stage for maybe a variety of different reasons.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually right. And I think in family businesses, the carrot that we're all chasing on the end of the stick doesn't ever get any closer. You're always chasing after it.
That's a good message to take from this.
You maybe as you go along, you can see that the benefits of what you've been doing, but I think things like trying to outsource some of the, not necessarily the management, but getting outside ideas to come in, actually is relatively low cost, but actually could bring about a wealth of opportunity. Even no matter what size the business is, doesn't matter if it's 6 people, 4 people, 100 people, doesn't matter. You can bring somebody in for one day a quarter, and they can throw a lot of ideas onto the table that you maybe didn't think of. They mightn't even be appropriate. Mm-hmm. However, one idea just might be, and all of a sudden, it maybe just kicks off something else. But I think every company, whenever it's very small and in startup situation, absolutely, you can't just go out and just take on 20 people to do all the jobs, and that fixes the problem because you're over the edge financially. So it just has to grow into it.